It's 19:30 UTC on Sunday, December 3rd, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Yeah, we're just seeing an explosion of freedom of speech and laughter and criticism and sarcasm. It's almost like we're back in Washington.
That was U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Harry Thomas Jr. He talks about his impressions of the changes sweeping Zimbabwe and U.S. support for democratic and economic reforms. Good evening. I'm Kutanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
This week, Zimbabwe continued to evolve as the President Emmerson Mnangagwa named a new cabinet. Supporters claimed they were largely former and discredited officials from the Mugabe administration. Also named were two military officers. Also in the news were calls for the religious community to have more of a say in the country's democratic future. There were also calls for electoral reforms and greater respect for disabled Zimbabweans. Joining us to talk about some of the latest news from Harare is Tononoka Hwande of VOA's Zimbabwe service.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So considering that the church had a part in mediating Mugabe's resignation, and do you think that there will be more of a church influence in the new government?
Not necessarily. The church has always been involved in a lot of things, including politics, since our nation was born. Mm-hmm. But the role they play, there is an understanding of keeping this government, politics out of the church and the church out of government. But it doesn't always work that way, because the church can sneak in, mm-hmm. Into government through issues like human rights violations, mm-hmm. and they want to champion the cause of the oppressed people, etc., etc. I got an impression today, mm-hmm. That while the church does not want interference from the government, mm-hmm. they want to be allowed to get involved in government, because they say they are there for the people. Mm-hmm. So it's a very unbalanced mm-hmm. Existence between church and state, more or less like we see here. Much as they try to keep them apart, there's always a place, a point where they meet, mm-hmm. and they cannot avoid each other.
Do you think that would be something the new government would actually allow, letting the church have influence on the decisions that they make?
I don't think it. They might say that on paper, mm-hmm. but practically, mm-hmm. we cannot divorce those two institutions. It's just not possible. Mm-hmm. And also, if you consider the fact that we are basically a Christian country, and most of the things that we do, mm-hmm. in school, in society, everything, there is a heavy influence of Christianity in everything that we do. Mm-hmm. So to say that you are now in parliament, you are now in politics, you leave Jesus by the door, mm-hmm. it's not going to happen that way. I don't believe that they can separate themselves from each other. I don't believe that the government would even try to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just unspoken. Mutual considerations, I guess, but when it comes to the crunch, one of them will have to interfere in the other's business. There's no escaping that.
One of the topics that also came up was electoral reforms. Can you speak a little more about that?
There are a lot of things within the electoral system that make it very, very difficult for the ordinary, so-called ordinary person, especially those who are in the rural areas. You have just witnessed in the last few weeks, mm-hmm. where the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission was going out to register people to vote, and some things like when a person in the rural area is asked to provide documentary evidence of where they live,
yeah.
you see that there is already a problem right there. There are no streets, there are no numbers, there's nothing, and you have to go to the sub-chief or to the chief to get a letter that says this person stays within my domain. And then the political issues emerge, where some people don't want to save other people because of their political affiliations and mm-hmm. things like that. So all those things have to be taken into consideration. Some of these things have to be removed. Some of them have to be softened up so that people can access registrations without much of a problem.
Okay. How would you reconcile kind of trying to make sure that the elections are free and fair, but also making sure people can vote? How would you reconcile specifically in the rural areas, so to speak, making sure that everyone is going to be accounted for, since there is that problem of getting them even on the electoral roll because of the informality of addresses?
The first thing that they need to do is to have a completely independent commission that is involved in nothing but registering people. Right now, we have people can be registered anywhere. If you go to the local district commissioner's office, you can get your identification papers. But when it comes to elections, certain requirements exist, mm-hmm. and those cannot be provided at the local district administrator's office. So those are the kind of things that they have to work on to make it easier for people to access the registration process.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was sure. Tononoka Wande of VOA Zimbabwe Service.
Thank you.
The U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Harry Thomas Jr., was among the changes sweeping Zimbabwe in the 2 weeks. In an interview today, Blessing Zulu asked him for his views on those changes and about the U.S. desire to see economic reforms that will boost investment and improve democratic governance.
Clearly, no one saw it coming, except perhaps the military and the incoming president. That said, it's time to move forward and see how we can support a truly independent, democratic, and prosperous Zimbabwe.
Ambassador Thomas, does this mean targeted sanctions against some individuals in government by the U.S. are going to be removed?
Well, as you know, ZADERA is an act of Congress approved by the President of the United States. For any movement on that, the President and Congress would have to act. That said, the United States' decision is always based on activity that's positive, that points in a new direction. That is why in the last year we have removed individuals and entities from the sanctions list who really had changed their performance. That is always open in the future, but again, that's a decision up to the President of the United States and our Congress.
We understand that there is a U.S. Delegation in Zimbabwe. Who exactly is there, and do you know what their mission is?
Yes, Representative Daryl Issa, Republican, representing San Diego and Orange counties in California, was here from midday Friday to midday today. He departed for home. I think he gained valuable insight by talking to people across a broad spectrum of this new democracy. So he met people in the opposition, in government, in civil society, human rights activists, everyone that you would expect would be able to give him their views of not only the past and the need for reconciliation and justice, but also what they would like to see happen in this wonderful country where we're just seeing an explosion of freedom of speech and laughter and criticism and sarcasm. It's almost like we're back in Washington.
Ambassador, there was also a question that many are asking. Does Washington consider this a military coup, a guided coup, or a popular revolt?
Well, clearly the Zimbabwean people were involved in a peaceful change. And the most important thing is we see how we go forward. We would like to see democracy flourish, and whatever short-term arrangements the government has established, the path must lead to free and fair elections. I think that is important. I think also, as the Secretary of State said, Zimbabwe has an extraordinary opportunity to set itself on a new path, and I think most people would
to what extent is Washington willing to assist Zimbabwe achieve its goals economically?
Well, first of all, remember, we remain the largest bilateral and multilateral donor with over $250 million in bilateral aid each year. We're the largest contributor to the Global Fund, largest contributor to the United Nations. And when you look at that, the jobs that it creates have been tremendous. Also, we hope that you're eager to see our wonderful new embassy blessing that should open sometime in 2018 that has created over 700 jobs for Zimbabweans of in duration 1 to 3 years. So we're already an economic force. But what we would like to see is the involvement of the American private sector, particularly Zimbabwean Americans. But we know that Zimbabwean Americans, or everybody in the world, is only going to spend the money and invest if the economic conditions are right. Now, President Mnangagwa said he's going to set the conditions right, and we clearly have to give him time to do so. We take him at his word, and if that happens, I think you will see investment from the United States and from all over.
How did you receive his maiden inaugural speech?
Oh, I was there at the National Stadium with good Lord knows how many people, because it was the most crowded, jammed, festive crowd that I've ever seen in Zimbabwe. It was a wonderful moment, and I think that's why you saw Morgan Tsvangirai and others come, to show respect for the office of the presidency as well as to participate in what they expect to be a functioning democracy.
That was the U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Harry Thompson Jr. He was talking to VOA's Blessing Zulu.
In Zimbabwe, media freedom was restricted under former President Robert Mugabe. State media has been Mugabe's mouthpiece, and private media imposed its own regulations to avoid government retaliation. Reporter Kudzai Zunawashe takes a look at how the local media covered the recent coup, which they did not anticipate.
The military intervention, which ended 37 years of rule by Robert Mugabe, took the government-backed daily paper, The Herald, completely by surprise. Working quickly, the publishers shelved the planned edition for the day and put out a new one that afternoon. The takeover came as voters planned to go to the polls 8 months from now. Election reporting has been high on the agenda. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parli, a citizen journalist-driven platform that covers parliament business and other political events.
Well, it was very hard. It stretched our team to the max. There was a lot of misinformation, and fake news was at an all-time high. Lots of press conferences that we had to attend to. The coup happened in the middle of a scheduled parliamentary break. The whole country was in a limbo in terms of news and the way forward, and everyone was just speculating.
At the time, the local media added to the confusion with some questionable and unconfirmed reports. Pascal Kunyeda is a media analyst.
The problem now is local media, they've taken leads from social media when they are doing their stories. Local media tends to lose its credibility, especially over the last few weeks. The privately owned media have lost some good ground because they've been falling prey to those social media fake news.
In Mugabe's era, a good number of Zimbabweans had stopped listening to news from the state media, which were considered to be one-sided and untrustworthy. However, during the takeover, government officials became the only reliable source of credible news. Kunyeda explains.
At that time, those who were in levers of power were controlling. And now that the military had taken over, they went on to utilize ZBC and Zimpaper as their official mouthpieces. That's why you realize now on state media, that was where you would get credible sources of information, because the army would come in with a periodic update.
Taking lessons from covering the coup, Dodo touches on some of the things they will have to improve on to guard against fake news.
I think it's very important to have strong contacts, because it's very easy for real information to be manipulated. It's very important to use video and an audio of the original sources, because text can be manipulated. Verifying sources, getting established linkages from in high offices who can verify and confirm what's happening.
Lucky Aroni is the co-founder and producer of Bustop TV. an online platform that runs a news edition that keeps Zimbabweans informed and entertained with their comic delivery. He says they are taking lessons from covering the coup and are crowdfunding to improve their coverage.
From that, we learned that we need to start streaming our news from location as it happens. Not that we're going to shoot and upload later on, but we need to upload. We need to start streaming live. After the coup, we realized that we need more equipment, especially to stream live from location. So we decided to start a GoFundMe campaign to raise that money to buy equipment.
The GoFundMe campaign is ongoing, and Pastop TV says this is largely to prepare for elections that are a few months away. Kunyeda says the attitude of the government officials towards the media may be changing. In the past, officials withheld information from the private media, but the new administration seems to be open to finding new ways of working with diverse and evolving information outlets. For VOA, this is Kudzai Nawashe from Harare.
A leading Gambian political science professor in the U.S. is calling for increased transparency in Zimbabwe. Specifically, Professor Abdoulaye Sane wants the new government in Harare to set up a commission of inquiry. It would investigate former President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF government. Professor Sane teaches at the Ohio-based Miami University. He says Mugabe should be held accountable for the alleged atrocities which occurred during his rule. He says a commission should be formed by the new government for the sake of history and to promote reconciliation in Zimbabwe. For more on the story, VOA's Pandey Mbai reports.
Zimbabwe is one of the latest countries in Africa to lose a long-serving leader. 2 weeks ago, it occurred when the military took power after decades of misrule by Robert Mugabe. Mr. Mugabe has ruled Zimbabwe from 1980 to 2017. He was forced to resign from the presidency and replaced by Emmerson Mnangagwa, who enjoys the support of the military and of war veterans. Dr. Abdoulaye Sane is a political science professor at the Miami University in Ohio. Dr. Sane shares his views on the recent political change in Zimbabwe.
I believe the political changes in Zimbabwe represent an epic moment, not only for the country, but also for the continent of Africa. Clearly, President Mugabe, or ex-President Mugabe, had been in power for 37 years, and in those intervening years had literally destroyed the country.
Professor Sen says the people of Zimbabwe, particularly the opposition and the media, have suffered the brunt of the former ZANU-PF leader's dictatorial rule. Therefore, he said, in the interest of justice and fair play, there should be a deep and critical assessment of Mugabe's years in power.
Well, if not, if in fact for being punished, he's a 93-year-old man who really has no purpose in putting him in jail. I would have thought that the new government would investigate the atrocities, investigate his wealth, bring him, or at least bring attention to what had transpired under his rule. This is for purposes of national reconciliation, for part of Mugabe's legacy to be investigated.
Professor Sen is not optimistic about the new government in Zimbabwe. He cites the lack of diversity in the government.
It is a very disquieting development. It would seem to me that the youth, as in Gambia, were instrumental in the major changes that occurred. To sideline them, to say little about their contribution, and no concrete plans as to their future. Many people believe that the new government really is not into making fundamental changes, but business as usual. Many of the new ministers, actually are not new, they are from the former government.
Sen notes that having the same old political actors in the new government will not offer the much anticipated changes expected by Zimbabweans. He says the new president should have reached out to the opposition and the youth population in the interest of national unity. Sen also discusses the inclusion of the military chiefs in the new government. He says what happened in Zimbabwe is not something new in Africa.
One of the important strategies undertaken by many African leaders following independence is to co-opt part of the military top brass to important positions of government. This in an attempt to control their looming presence and importance, and to some degree use it as a means of preempting coup d'etat. So this is an old strategy that has been used not only in Zimbabwe, but also in many, many other countries too.
Professor Sen also said he will welcome any move taken by the new government to compensate white farmers whose lands were confiscated by the former Mugabe government. He says Mugabe's land redistribution program was politicized and has led to a sharp decline in agricultural production since the departure of the white farmers from Zimbabwe. For VOA Africa, this is Pande Rimbai reporting.
There has been a call from Zimbabweans throughout social media asking President Emmerson Mnangagwa to fire Augustin Juhuri, the Commissioner General of Zimbabwe's Republic Police Force. The general sentiment is that Juhuri is corrupt and is the head of a questionable police force. Here are some reactions from the hashtag Juhuri Must Go.
Alice S. Hill says, glad they are aware that they have been unprofessional, but it's not enough. Juhuri must go. Zimbabwe needs an environment which entices tourists to return.
Tape Mango says, there has been a lot of institutionalized corruption within the ZRP, so keeping him means they are okay with the way they have been carrying out their duty, which is extorting money from citizens. We need a new commissioner and a new way of doing things.
Daddy Hope says, if I was Augustin Juhuri, the chief of police, I would simply resign under the pretext of retirement. He is now a tainted figure.
Mukoro says, but they must not let him go free. He must be answerable for making our police officers look like vendors in our roads and must explain and be accountable for where that money these traffic cops were collecting was going.
Michael Mpofu says, Juhuri should be arrested for the abuse he unleashed on citizens. He has corrupted the police and he must go either way.
Some have lighter opinions.
Michi Hubi says, please forgive him. He must only repent for his corrupt deeds.
Zrimba says, poor Juhuri, he has never been on the right side since his time in Mozambique.
Those were just a few of the opinions on hashtag Juhuri Must Go, where readers were giving their opinions on the call for Zimbabwe's new president to fire Augustin Juhuri, the Commissioner General of the Zimbabwean Republic Police Force. You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa in Washington. At 52 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change.
New research shows that most children in South Africa will experience sexual or physical abuse before they reach the age of 18. The disturbing statistic is contained in the South African Child Gauge 2017 report. It examines the country's treatment of its youngest and most vulnerable citizens.
The study concludes with a warning. South Africa must counter the damage done to children by violence, poverty and inequality by investing in initiatives that support and enrich their lives. The 2017 Child Gauge puts the cost of damage to young citizens at 300 billion rand. That's just under $22 billion. The research, which is undertaken by the Child Institute and UNICEF, makes for grim reading. It shows one in three children will experience either sexual or physical abuse by the time they reach 18. It also indicates 12% of young South Africans live on a little over $1 per day. The report highlights that most local children simply don't have the tools needed to thrive. Lucy Jamison from the University of Cape Town's Children's Institute is the lead author of the study.
Violence holds children back and lack of nutrition. South Africa's quite a wealthy country in terms of the continent, but we are still seeing figures of 27% of our children below the age of 5 who are not getting the correct nutritional input, which means that their growth is stunted. And it's not just about physical development.
South Africa is one of the most economically unequal societies in the world, and substantial parts of its population live in poverty and without food security. The report finds that the top 10% of South African children are flourishing, but the bottom 70% are failing to reach their full potential. Jamison says a lack of nutrition slows down children's cognitive development.
Their brain doesn't develop as it should do, so they don't have the capacity to learn properly when they go to school. Also, the state of our education system, we are finding the first part of the school years, children need to learn to read. And in South Africa, children are supposed to learn to read in the foundation phase, which is the first 4 years of school. And at the end of those 4 years, 58% of our children can't read with comprehension in any language.
Jamison says the education curriculum assumes that once a child finishes the fourth year of schooling, he or she can read. If they can't, they will quickly be left behind. She says violence, poverty and hunger come together, and as the children stuck in the cycle mature, they have lower employment prospects. The socio-economic burden is then passed down to the next generation. The South African trend is not an anomaly, as very similar patterns are reflected around the continent. She points out African solutions to African problems are important.
If we look to countries within Africa, Uganda has run a very successful series of programs, the Good Schools programs, the Raising Voices programs. And we in South Africa can learn from that. Equally, we have programs here that we can share that fit the African context and can resolve some of these complex and integrated problems.
The 2017 Child Gauge report has been handed over to the Minister of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. The government will now examine it.
They are responsible for looking at the indicators individually. For example, they are currently working on an integrated program to combat violence against women and children. In each country in Africa has different governance structures and different departments, but it is true across the continent that we need health professionals, social service professionals, police officials, and the justice system to work together in the area of violence in particular. You know, so we need these kind of coordinating bodies.
It's not all bad news, though. The research shows poverty has decreased since the dawn of democracy in 1994. Children have greater access to services, and their survival rate is higher. More of the youth are also in formal housing structures. But these gains are simply not enough, and NGOs are asking for additional funding to help assist those youngsters who still need help with their most basic needs. For VOA Africa, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
That's it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We leave you now with music from Amaro Brown.
I'ma give up anything you ask, I deliver. Bending backwards, building your dreams, hoping that you will love me a change. Chinza, chinza, chaka ipa. Ya, ya, ii, ya, tuneta. Lera, imwa, nemu, kaka. Ino, fuma, yokuruma. Dance, boy, am I a dance, boy? Is this a fake romance, boy? Take up.